This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Well, young people are among the demonstrators filling the streets to protest the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis and others. And my next guest says their educational institution should play an equally crucial role in fighting racism. The way schools and universities have responded to police brutality in the past can shed light on what to do differently this time. Tracy Benson is an assistant professor of educational leadership at UNC Charlotte. He researches structural racism in education and joins me now. Welcome, Tracy.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you so much for having me today.
It's good to have you. And a lot of people have a hard time talking about race. How does our education play into this difficulty?
Well, I think that educators play a key role in sort of perpetuating racism in our society, because all the officers that were involved in the murder of George Floyd were in someone's classroom at some point in time. These were students somewhere in some classroom. And the history of color mute racism, that's suppressing conversations about race and racism in school, in the school buildings, is the racism that perpetuates this very type of violence. Because, you know, students and kids want to process what's happening in society. They want to talk about everything. The younger students want to talk about racism and what they see. But it's the racial illiteracy of the adults in the building and our discomfort with having kids talking openly about the implications of racism that prevents them from developing the racial literacy that they need to have when they then become adults, so we can talk openly about it. And so the problems that we have in schools is that we subscribe to a color mute racism in which we don't talk about topics, even when, you know, cities are literally burning around the United States, we're still not talking about what's happening in classrooms in the terms of what racism does to our society.
And this plays out if starting in kindergarten and goes all the way through the university. You were at UNC Charlotte when Keith Lamont Scott, a 43-year-old black man, was shot by police near the school in 2016. Tell us about the school's response, because you did research on that, right?
I did. And this was my second case study on educational responses to violence. My first case study was on the Ferguson-Florissant School District after Mike Brown's murder in the street and the school system's response to that. And so when Keith Lamont Scott was shot within a mile of the campus response was one of sort of racial indifference. You know, there had been a long history, even before Keith Lamont Scott, of black people being murdered by police. And so when we had the officer-involved incident where an officer shot an unarmed black man near our campus, there wasn't a response that, wow, this goes along the line of the legacy of what's been happening in our country for a very long time. It was, oh, this was an act of violence that was near campus. There's no need for alarm. And so when the protest started near the university, our chancellor, again, when in this racial indifferent way, did not sound the alarm in terms of we really need to take this seriously. This is something where racism is at play, or the appearance of racism is at play, and we need to address it in that sense. And so when the protest started, you know, he would use words such as mob or looters, things of that sort, that as if these protesters were doing things that had no bearing or no sort of historical attachment to what has been going on in the black community for a long time. And so just the inability, the racial illiteracy, again, going back to that racial illiteracy point, that folks were not prepared to talk about race and the implications of race that spilled into the university classrooms, where some professors were even joking about the protests. Where students sitting in their classroom had been protesting the night before. So the racial literacy goes from K all the way through college, because we have yet to really recognize racism as an issue of great importance in our society.
And what you were saying was, and what you were suggesting in your research too, in terms of your recommendations, was not that anybody condone the violence in their statements as a chancellor when you're asked to speak publicly about this, but that in your statements you recognize there's a kind of a tone clarity in your own thinking and history and understanding that this comes out of something. And so whatever you think about breaking windows, some recognition that this outburst has come from a long history, that was absent, and that's the illiteracy that you're talking about.
Right, the absence, and then all of the attachment to racial violence and the psychological stress. Whenever this happens anywhere, it's not just people of color, it's all people. It creates a psychological stress about racial violence. You know, it's not just impacting black and brown communities, it's impacting white society in terms of not wanting to be attached to that, but yet feeling helpless on what to do.
So what are your recommendations? How do universities respond to racial trauma following, and what were the recommendations in your case studies?
Well, and the recommendations are one, that this, like your previous guest said, that this is not a one-time racial violence. Racism exists with policing in our society. It exists in every one of our institutions. It exists at UNCC, and it exists in my department as well as other departments across campus. So, you know, we have access to data that tells us that at UNCC currently, we have very few numbers of Black faculty members, one. And then two, even smaller numbers of full professors at UNCC. This is not just by chance, but it's by the racial bias is built into the system. And so while it would be nice to intervene in terms of police violence as a university, what we need to first start doing is addressing the racism that's right there in front of us. Because it's along the same continuum of racism that kills Black and brown people in the streets, but that is at play in every institution, including education in our society. So we need to start with the personal, close, and immediate about how racism is taking place within our circle of influence that will then impact, you know, the broader spectrum of racism in our society.
Is there guidance out there for educators at any level? What is it, and how can they find the guidance? Because I think there is some trepidation that anyone would have, particularly in classroom, about opening this up if they didn't have some set of guidelines or some assurance that they're, you know, they could sort of conduct this in a thoughtful way. Is there any help, and where do they find it?
Well, thank you for that question, Vic. And I chuckle a little bit because I just wrote a piece for Ed Week about what educators should and should not do in response to George Floyd's death. And it was just posted yesterday. It's available. You type in Ed Week, what educators can do in response to George Floyd's death. And what educators should do is educate themselves. If they really, truly want to contribute to a more racially just society, just as you Google, you know, right now, I know that I've Googled a number of times how to make homemade bread because we're under quarantine, how to make, you know, face masks on a sewing machine. I can Google it and have a video right in front of me because I care to be able to do that. There are a number of resources just by doing a simple Google search, how to talk about racism in the classroom, and you'll get a litany of results. And so it's a simple Google search.
Now, I have to ask you this, though, because it sounds obvious that the better educated we are, the more likely we are to have an open mind and come up with some fruitful solutions. But I have to say, we've seen in this, you know, if we take a look at the Central Park situation just, you know, a few weeks ago, where not even a few weeks ago, where, you know, a woman who worked in the Obama campaign is saying, "I'm being threatened by a Black man." Is education really enough? I mean, I'm very serious about this question. I despair almost.
Well, we have to remember right now that we are not very far removed from the legalized oppression of Black people, right? If you think about historically, from 1619 until 1865, that's 246 years of enslavement of Black people. Then even after that, up until, we could say 1965, the Civil Rights Movement, that it was still legal to discriminate against Black people. So if you add all that up, that's 355 years of legalized oppression. So if you flash forward from 1965 up until 2020, that doesn't even begin to make a dent into the hundreds of years of oppression. So it's going to take, yes, it's going to take education, it's going to take dialogue, and it's going to take time, but sustained effort. So it needs to happen, and it needs to be an equal and opposite amount of time. You know, we can't solve all these problems within, you know, 60 years compared to 335 years of legalized oppression. And so we have to be patient, but we have to be purposeful.
And start now, I would guess.
Right.
All right, thank
Never
you.
Never too late.
Tracy Benson, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership at UNC Charlotte. Tracy Benson, thanks so much.
Great. Thanks for having me today, Frank.
You can find out more about his work and our show at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.